welcome to the CineScare podcast with your hosts, Matt and Joe. Hello, everyone.
Hey, everybody.
I'm Matt Speak.
I'm Joe Jans. And
we are back again with episode number two. Thank you all for listening to the last one. I know we had a lot of downloads and a lot of people following us on Facebook and Instagram and everything. And so, and I got a lot of feedback too from people that they really enjoyed it. So we're going to keep going. Probably, I think we're going to, after Halloween, after October, I think we're going to settle into a once every 2 week schedule, maybe twice a month if we can do it. But for Halloween, I think we're going to try to do one more before Halloween, one this week and one next week. Let's see. Oh, and I wanted to say also, Joe and I, we don't live in the same area. I grew up in Bettendorf, Iowa, and he grew up in, where did you grow up?
LaSalle, Illinois.
LaSalle, Illinois. Somewhere between Peoria and Chicago, I think, right?
Actually, it's about halfway between Chicago and Davenport.
So right in the middle of Illinois.
Yeah.
Is that near Mendota? Yep.
Huh. Yes,
I had really good tacos there one time in a taco cart.
I've had really good tacos in LaSalle. Actually, it's a burrito.
Well, it's kind of hard to mess up a taco, isn't it? Like,
it's any Mexican food, in my opinion, it's all just meat and cheese and a tortilla in different,
But when different somebody order. Does it really well, it's heaven.
Oh, it's like magic. It's magic.
Okay, so I live in Burbank. And Joe lives in Davenport. So I live in Burbank, California. I used to live there. Actually, I lived there last year and I moved back. But so we do this remotely, obviously. We can't get together once a week. So we do this on a piece of software online and put it together.
And it's like we've never left the same room.
One thing I was going to talk about was we are looking for ghost stories. So we'd like some listener involvement in the show. And one way we thought we could do that is I know there's all those murder web podcasts, like what's the one with the murderinos? I can't remember the name of it now. My favorite dark. Murder. Yeah. Oh, it is. It is, but it's a couple comedians who host it. So it's kind of funny, but it's called My Favorite Murder, and people send them, murders from their hometown or something like that. And then they read them online or on the show. So I was thinking we could do the same thing with like ghost stories. If somebody has a ghost story, email it to us at CineScareHorror@gmail.com, or of course you can message it to us on Facebook or any place else that you have our social media.
Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, just start looking for CineScare Horror and you'll find us.
So I don't know. Have you done anything Halloween related over there in the Quad Cities?
We have not. We normally have a large Halloween party, but we do it every other year. It's just a lot of work. And this year with COVID and the threat of trick or treat still hanging in the balance, as of right now, it's still on. But we just decided not to go towards putting out the whole kit and caboodle of, we've got a bunch of props. We've got a graveyard that we put out on the front, decorate the inside of the house just as well. But this year, it just wasn't worth it because we live kind of like off at the end of a cul-de-sac and nobody's really going to come down here. Nobody's going to see all the decorations. It would really just be for me and I would rather spend my time doing this podcast.
There isn't a lot going on out here. I think they might do trick-or-treating. It kind of goes back and forth even at this point, but I believe they're going to allow trick-or-treating. But things, are a lot more closed down here than they are there. So there just isn't that much to do. But I did go to every year they have this event here called the Haunted Hayride, And of course, you can't do a hayride this year. So what they did is they turned it into a drive-through experience, you know, and it was, I don't know, someplace down south of LA. It took about a half hour to get there. And you drive through, I think it was south or maybe it was east. Anyway, I don't remember which direction I was driving, but you drive down this hill and they had like props and sets set up with like creepy stuff, creepy music, lights and all of that. And then you basically get down to the bottom and you're in what amounts to a makeshift drive-in, you know, like movie theater drive-in. And they had a big screen set up and they had like a bunch of short movies they were showing that were kind of tied together by some host or whatever. And then there were tons of like actors running around. They'd run up to your car and do those noisemakers and stuff like that. So you got a little feeling like we were going to haunted houses. It wasn't the same, certainly. And it was pretty darn expensive for what it was, but it was at least something.
I wish they would come out with a haunted car wash, where, you know, they'd have characters running up as you're getting your car washed, so I could get a scare and a wash all at the same time. At least it's productive. Yeah.
You know, I'd go for that.
Yeah. I would too.
And they could do it like as a fundraiser for their graveyard.
I'd pay like an extra couple bucks for
a little
that
fundraiser for their graveyard to kind of spruce things up, you know?
Right.
Okay. So
somebody needs to get on that, at least for next year.
A haunted car wash, please.
One of our dozens of listeners, I'm sure, has already got that.
Yeah, they're working on it. And then we should get like a 10% cut.
Or at least a free car wash.
I would take either one. Okay, so getting to the movies that I've watched. So, of course, as we said last week, this is what spooky season they're calling it, or I like to call it Shocktober. I'd rather be called that.
I like Shocktober so much better than spooky season. It sounds like a kindergarten.
Or Speaktober. That works for me too.
That's every year though.
But so the first movie I watched, I'm not going to touch on it too much. I'm just going to kind of go over it because you watched it last time and talked about it. And that was The Babysitter. And that was pretty good. I enjoyed that. I'm not a huge fan of McGee, the director. There's just something about his style that kind of rubs me the wrong way sometimes, but this actually worked pretty well. And the actress Samara Weaving, she was also in that movie Ready or Not. Did you see that? And
yes, I did.
She's great. She's got a great like comedic timing and everything. So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun and it was McGee. His style in this worked really well. But like you said, I haven't had a chance to see the sequel yet, and I guess we'll see tonight if you watched it. But I really enjoyed the first one. The
spoiler alert: I did.
You're not supposed to spoil it that early.
we're gonna get to it eventually.
So the one though, the next night on the 8th, I watched The Night Stalker from 1972, a TV movie. This is another one that I wasn't tipped off on it by the Pure Cinema podcast. They had just been talking about it on their show, and it reminded me of it. Because I remember when I was a kid, my parents talking about this, all the neighbors talking about it. People, it was like water cooler show before there were water cooler shows, you know. And everyone was talking about how scary it was. And 1972.
Wow, that was probably before water coolers.
Probably. Period. I don't know if there were water coolers. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was actually written by Richard Matheson, the screenplay. And he wrote the book I Am Legend and a lot of other horror novels. He wrote the screenplay. I believe he wrote the screenplay for Psycho, if I'm not mistaken. But he's written a lot of screenplays. He wrote a lot of the Twilight Zone episodes, including Terror at 20,000 Feet or whatever, the one with the little gremlin out on the wing. He wrote that screenplay. Yep. He's a well-established author. In fact, his son was at a book signing I was at, I was doing a book signing at this bookstore out here in LA called Dark Delicacies. And his son was sitting right next to me. He's also a writer, but signing books too. He had a lot more people come to him than I had come to me. I'll just say that. but it was not a great movie. It's one that you can only find on YouTube, or I think you can get it on Blu-ray. And from what I've heard, the Blu-ray is really nice. Like, it doesn't even look like a TV movie. But this was, at one time, this was the number one television movie of all time for a while. That's how popular this was. And that's saying something, because back then there were like three channels you could watch. So if 60 million people watched it, that's like, you know, you're pulling in most of the audience for very little competition. So in fact, I think it was the number one TV movie until the day after, which was that, I don't know if you remember it or not, but it was that nuclear war movie that came out in the '80s. It was huge. Yep.
Scared the bejesus out of the
everybody. I think the Night Stalker, that was the movie that unseated it, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, it's got Darren McGavin, who was the father in A Christmas Story. He's great in it, but there's a kind of throwback feel to it. Kind of feels like a 1940s movie in some ways. Mixed in with a 1970s movie, but it's about this reporter who's investigating a bunch of murders that people think have been committed by a vampire. So it's not scary, certainly, but especially if you're a little older and you remember this at the time, it might be worth watching just for a little reminiscing, I guess. That's 1972's The Night Stalker.
I'm actually going to throw a curveball. I'm going to review a book. I just finished wrapping up Stephen King's From a Buick 8. This was released in 2002. I have in the past, I don't know, I'd say probably 3 or 4 years, just decided I'm going to try to find every single Stephen King book I can get my hand on and try to get through them. This is by far my least favorite out of the 15 or 20 or so Stephen King novels I've read. It was just so hard to get into. I'd put the book down, try to pick it up like a couple days later. Just couldn't get a good pace for it. One of his lesser known novels, it's about this. It's set in the 1950s, I believe, 60s. An old Buick 8 pulls up at an old fashioned gas station, and the owner of the vehicle walks away and sort of disappears. And the local sheriff's department sort of adopts this vehicle, and over the years start to realize it's more than just a vehicle. It's more of a gateway into another dimension. It reads almost like the main character should be, yet again, Tom Hanks in every one of his, Stephen King good movies. I hope this is something they never actually make into a film. I don't think you could get in depth enough in any of the characters to really enjoy this, but, anyway, that was first book review that we've done. I give that a flat thumbs. So.
Well, yeah. Sometimes the Stephen King books are a little hit and miss. Sometimes you'll get a good one. Yeah. Sometimes you don't. But my next movie was on the 9th. I watched Friday the 13th Part 6, Jason Lives, and that one. It's underrated, but that's not saying a whole lot, I guess. It's not one of the better. I would say it's probably maybe fourth best Friday the 13th, in my opinion. I kind of like Part 2, Part 4, Part 1, and then this one. And it had been some time since I'd watched it. Horshack is actually in this movie in a small part at the beginning. Believe it or not, from Welcome Back, Cotter. Yeah, I don't recall his name now. What is his name? Oh, Ron Palillo was his name, and is his name.
Does this also have one of the Coreys in it? Or
is that Corey Feldman was in Part 4, and that was the final chapter, of course, in Part 4.
Of course, which ended
you never saw another one after that. Yeah. And then Part 5 was The New Beginning, which I think the killer wasn't Jason or something. I don't think I ever watched that one. We'll have to get our friend Mark on here maybe sometime, and he can talk about
You know, Mark is freaking out right now listening to this episode going, oh my God, they're going to be doing Friday the 13th without me.
Well, we'll only do part six because it was actually pretty fun. It, you know, part six, it looks great. I think I rented it on it was on Amazon Prime. It's on Amazon Prime this month or maybe always is, I don't know, but it was free if you have an Amazon Prime account. But it's a good one. There's a lot of it's very campy, and it kind of just buys into the camp rather than trying to be serious like the previous ones had. This one kind of goes right all in with the camp, and there's some pretty dumb comedy scenes, but there's some kind of funny parts too, and there's some self-referential parts as well. So it's not by any means a great movie, but it, you know, it's kind of fun, and I felt a little nostalgic watching it. It's got a good atmosphere too, which I didn't remember. Last time I saw it was some years ago, actually quite a long time ago, and I just didn't remember it being, you know, that great. But it actually is kind of entertaining. I thought they, and it looks good too. So Friday the 13th, Part 6, Jason Lives. It's worth checking out if you need to find something to put on, and especially if you haven't seen it before, or even if you have, if it's been a while, it's worth revisiting. And yeah.
All right. Hey, how many of these are we doing?
I'm going through. Yeah.
All of them.
Yeah. I'm going through okay. Today.
Then I'll be quick. The next one I watched was 1981's classic Scanners. Nice. I just remember when I was a kid, I probably saw this picture of the head exploding in an issue of Fangoria magazine and was just enamored with it. This is a David Cronenberg classic. It's a story about some telepaths that are trying to basically take over the planet eventually, I guess, if they have their way, the resistance of the other telepaths that are trying to stop them. It is also starring a wonderful Jennifer O'Neill. This is, I mean, I could probably watch that scene with the head exploding all day long, and I'd never get tired of it. It was a wonderful practical effect. It was something everybody talked about in the industry, and it's still to this day just pure fun to watch. The rest of the storyline, it ebbs and flows. There's some slow parts to the movie, but this is certainly, if this is something you've never seen and you call yourself a horror fan at all, you got to pick it up and watch it. So it was 1981 Scanners.
Yeah, you know, this, I'm glad you watched it because this is one that I need to revisit. I haven't watched Scanners in a long time. Last year, I was going to watch Scanners. I'm not quite sure why I didn't. Maybe I couldn't find it online. Where did you find it? Where did you stream it from?
I believe it was HBO Max.
Okay, I don't have that because I have Roku, unfortunately, and they don't have HBO Max yet. But I'll have to look for it because that's one that I definitely... Reanimator was the one I watched last year. The same movie, obviously, but they remind me of each other for some reason. And
yeah, I haven't seen Reanimator. I haven't seen anything.
I mean, the others, the sequels are obviously diminishing quality. Although there's some people who just swear by some of the sequels, but I really liked Reanimator a lot. So, but I got to check out Scanners because I haven't watched that since. I bet I haven't watched it since the 90s. I bet
1981.
Well, no, it's been since then. But
yeah.
Okay, my next movie, well, it's not a movie, it's a TV show. It's The Haunting of Bly Manor that just released, I believe it was last week or the week before, something like that. It was right after we recorded our first episode. And it is, I guess, in a way, sort of the sequel. It's not a sequel because it's a different story. Kind of like, what's American Horror Story? They have a different storyline each season, you know? That's what they're doing with this. The Haunting of Hill House came out a couple years ago, and Mike Flanagan, the director, who also directed, he's directed a lot of things, including the Dr. Sleep and a bunch of other things. But he directed this, and it's fantastic. It's just a good old ghost story. There's a family whose parents have died. The uncle is the only one left, and the uncle doesn't really want to have anything to do with the kids, so they keep hiring nannies who don't stay on the job real long. And so they hire this nanny, and she comes, and of course it's an old house in England out in the countryside, a lot of property and a lot of weird stories. So you can imagine, you know, there's ghosts everywhere. And what's really interesting about this series is you, if you watch and pay attention, off in the background, you'll see a ghost. Like in, I don't know, did you watch Haunting of Hill House, that series? Okay.
Yes,
did you notice those ghosts in the background? Okay.
Yes.
Well, it's the same thing with this one. You'll look off. They'll be having a scene in the foyer of the house, and you'll see way out back in the background, it looks like a form back there. And sure enough, it is. It's somebody's, some ghost standing there watching what's going on. It's those little things like that kind of creep me out. So I enjoy it. But that's, it's very well written. This one is a bit slower than maybe what I know I've read on different groups on Facebook, that they don't like how slow it is, that it's a little too slow for them. Personally, I don't see what they're talking about. I'm really into the story. And, you know, those little moments like where someone, where there's a sound in a room or you see a ghost or something, those things really creep me out. So I'm a sucker for those things. That's right up my alley. So it doesn't bother me at all. And I'll do one more, because I can just go over this one real quick. It's called Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers. Now this one, I'm a huge Halloween series fan. I've seen most of them, several times. There's only one I've only seen once or twice. And this one is one of my favorites. And I remember when I was a kid being very disappointed by part 3 because it had nothing to do with Michael Myers and it was this completely different storyline. Now, as an adult, I've since come to appreciate part 3, but at the time I really was upset, like, oh, why wouldn't they do Michael Myers again? So this was them returning in 1988 to Michael Myers. And there's kind of a storyline, I think, that takes it in a slightly different direction. His niece, if you buy into the whole Jamie Lee Curtis being his sister, storyline. His niece is her daughter, and she's died. She's alive, and he finds that out, so he comes to Haddonfield, of course, on Halloween night to stalk her and find her and, I suppose, kill her. But it's got a great atmosphere. It takes its time. It lets you get to know the characters. It does a lot of the things that I really enjoy in a slasher. It doesn't just set up the kills, you know, just set up people walking outside for no reason and then kill them. You get involved in the lives of these characters. So, you know, I think it's a tight little slasher. I really enjoy it. So that's Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers.
All right. My next one, I'm not going to get into too many details just because this just came out. It's premiered on Hulu on October 7th, Books of Blood. This was written by Adam Simon, I believe, did The Haunting in Connecticut. Brannon Braggan, I believe, is it Braga, who did a lot of the Star Trek Generations and First Contact writing. And then, of course, Clive Barker of Hellraiser Nightbreed and Candyman fame. This is just another horror anthology. It got a lot of bad reviews on social media. I don't understand why. I liked it. I liked it quite a bit, actually. The stories intertwined very well. There were lots of, one in particular, very nice twist, hook all these stories in together. Decent practical effects, good character development. It was creepy. I mean, this isn't something that's going to be full of jump scares. Maybe one or two. If that's what you're looking for, just find something else to watch. This is more of a psychological tie-in. There's a nice payoff at the end. It kept you on the edge of your seat. It was very intense. I liked it. So again, that's 2020's Books of Blood. Did you Did you watch that one?
No, but I did hear that it was coming out. So that's definitely one that has been on my list to check out for sure. So you liked it?
Oh yeah. I liked it quite a bit. I'd certainly rewatch it.
That's good. Yeah. I will check that one out. That one I will put on my list. My next one is one that I really, really enjoyed. This might be my pick of these last couple weeks, perhaps, although it's hard to say because there's a couple I watched that were really good. But this one's called, it's 2014's Last Shift. And this is one I hadn't really heard of before, but somebody had told me about it. And so I decided to check it out. I've had a few people give me some great suggestions this last week. So please keep those suggestions coming. This one stars Juliana Harkavy, she hasn't really done that much stuff. And it's directed by Anthony de Blasi, who is a guy who has basically, I think he's done mostly like short movies and things like that, and some stuff that is very indie, you know. But it's about a rookie cop who's working her first shift, and her first job is to sort of be almost like a security guard for the old police station. They had just moved out of the one police station and they're moving into another police station, but they've left some evidence that needs a bunch of evidence that needs a hazmat crew to come in and clean out. So she needs to stay there and basically be a security guard for the old police station until the hazmat crew gets there at about 2 a.m. So of course the police station is haunted, and it's haunted by this crazy cult-like sort of like the Manson family, I guess is sort of what they're compared to or emulated to be. And you know, mayhem ensues. I don't want to say anything more than that because it does get pretty involved, and it's directed so well. It's very stark, and it's completely well lit. It's not like there's dark shadows everywhere and something lurking. It's a very bright, well lit movie, but the tension from these mysterious phone calls that the woman gets and things she sees and a homeless guy that somehow winds up inside the police station, all of this stuff is just very unsettling. And it has a tension to it that reminds me a lot of Alone, the movie that I recommended last week. So I highly recommend that one. That is 2014's Last Shift.
Okay. Next one on my list that I watch, this one's painful. It was the 2007's The Girl Next Door, based on the novel by Jack Ketchum, who based it on actual events. This is disturbing at its finest. So this movie takes place, it's about this girl named Meg Laughlin, and her parents die, and her sister have to go live with her Aunt Ruth. Aunt Ruth is an odd bird. Aunt Ruth obviously was married at one time and was left with 3 young boys that she had to raise on her own, and pretty much hates men and women. She hates everybody. She's that weird mother in the neighborhood that would let all the underage boys come over and drink beer and smoke cigarettes while they're all sitting around watching TV. She's got a
What's
really
the name of this one again?
Mother of this is The Girl Next Door. It's a novel by Jack Ketchum. I read the novel first like a couple of years ago, and I was surprised that there was an actual movie based on this. The movie isn't filmed well. It's got a really after school special type of lighting and acting ability. They're not exactly the cream of the crop for actors, but it's the story that's the lead. So anyway, Ruth starts to hate the fact that she's got to raise these 2 girls as well. And over time starts to punish them relentlessly, and to the point where it's just way over the top. I mean, if you're looking for something to feel comfortable about or uncomfortable about, this is the movie. Deeply disturbing tale of truth. That is basically the best way to describe this. It's horrific. You think Nightmare on Elm Street or Freddy or Jason or any of those things are evil. Ruth puts those guys to shame. And it's just so disturbing that this is all based off of an actual event. I do remember after I read the book, I dug into the archives to try to find out what this was all based off of. And it's just, Jack Ketchum embellished a little bit from the story, but not much. This is one that I would honestly say, read the book instead of watching the film. Again, it's Jack Ketchum is the novelist. I would give it this movie a hard pass. There's nothing really that shining out about it. You could probably come up with a better picture of everything, a better visualization in your own mind.
I'll have to not watch that one.
Yeah, read the book.
So my next one is Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein from 1948. And yep, this one.
Hey, wait, is this yep. Bela Lugosi?
Yeah.
Today's his birthday.
Hey, perfect timing. Yeah,
Bela Lugosi's birthday, October 20th.
Was in it. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, well, it's definitely his last performance as Dracula. He played a vampire briefly before he died in Plan 9 from Outer Space, but he wasn't Dracula. And I believe it's the only other time that he actually played Dracula other than the first Dracula. So they kept casting other people in the sequels to the first Dracula. And he was in it. Actually, all of the big stars. Well, no, they had a different guy playing Frankenstein. It wasn't Boris Karloff. But, you know, this is just a lot of fun. It's an old one. I hadn't seen it in a long time. Lon Chaney Jr. plays the Wolfman, and he's trying to, for some reason, he knows that Dracula has some plans to come back and steal Frankenstein and do something. The plot is really nonsensical, and it really is just a bunch of setups for Abbott and Costello to act goofy. And they do. But there's a fun atmosphere to it. The funny thing is that the non-Abbott and Costello scenes are actually pretty serious. It's an actual horror movie in the scenes that they're not in. But the scenes they're in, of course, are completely silly, and they're in most scenes. So anyway, that was Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. Another one that I watched, though, that I definitely recommend, and of course I recommend Abbott and Costello Meets Frankenstein. It's a classic comedy. But another one I recommend is a movie called Nocturne on Amazon Prime, I believe. And it is pretty, you know, this thing, it reminds me of a movie called The Perfection that came out last year, but it's about a girl who is a pianist, she and her sister are both pianists. They're twins, fraternal twins, I believe. And her sister is a great pianist. Like she's been accepted by Juilliard. She is the number one pianist at this arts high school that they go to. Her sister, the main girl, who's played by Sydney Sweeney, who is somebody that you'll see a lot more of. She's on a show on HBO that I can never remember the name of it right now, but it's a really good show and she's great in it. She's been in a lot of stuff recently, and I think this is a name that's going to keep popping up, Sydney Sweeney. But she plays the sister who's not quite as good, but she's still really good. Like if she was, you know, if we saw her playing, we'd be like, wow, you're amazing. But she's just, if you're somebody who's an expert in music, you just know that she's good for a pianist, but she's not great. And so she does this thing where she finds a journal that was written by a girl who had committed suicide at the school only months before. And this journal has sort of a cult thing going, where that it helps you with your skill, but there are prices to pay for that. So I don't want to go any further than that and give away too much, but that's basically the setup on it. And of course, this causes a whole lot of problems for this girl and her sister and their parents and the teachers at this school and everything. And of course, the girl, as she becomes better and better, and then suddenly is better than her sister, she starts to get that, you know, kind of feeling of power suddenly, and it changes her a little bit. But it's a pretty good movie. It's directed by a director named Zhu Quirk, who I've never heard of, but she's because she's done mostly, I think, shorts and some TV or whatnot. But it's definitely worth checking out. I recommend that one. It's called Nocturne, and it's on Amazon Prime.
Okay, I'm going to stick with the music theme. And the next one on my list was the 2018 film called The Perfection. This is a drama horror thriller. That's, have you seen
I
that?
I just mentioned it when I was talking about that other one.
But you didn't actually watch this one?
I watched it like last year when it came out, but or whenever it was okay. It came out. But yeah, no, I have seen that one. And it's very similar to Nocturne.
Yeah, yeah. Again, just different instruments. This is, I believe, cello. World's best cellist ends up having to get out of the game because her mother is ailing and then finally dies. When she tries to get back into the game, she realizes that she's been overthrown by a new young up-and-comer. The plot of trying to get back on top ensues with some wonderful acting, oddly enough, by Steven Weber of Wings fame.
Yeah, no, he's really good. He can be really good.
Except for in the made-for-TV The Shining. Yeah. But and honestly, this was full of twists and turns. I did really like this one. This is certainly something I would see myself watching again, even after, you know, knowing all the twists and turns. It was quite enjoyable. You did get on the edge of your seat from time to time. It is very suspenseful. Overall, it was a fun watch. I would, you know, I put it up there with like The Babysitter. I mean, it's not as comedic. It's not as McG. As far as just a really simple, easy, fun watch. Yeah,
I really liked that one too. It takes a couple crazy turns, but it's fun. I like that one a lot. I just want to touch on real quickly a TV show that's on HBO right now called, and actually I think they just had the finale was this last weekend. But it's called Lovecraft Country. And this one was really, it's crazy. It takes big swings. Not all of them connect. You know, some of them are home runs. Some of them are strikeouts. But boy, does it take some big swings. And it's a very interesting story. Almost completely African-American cast. And some really cool Lovecraftian creatures and ideas thrown in there. But I highly recommend it. It's a really good show. It's not perfect. And I know, you know, I've heard people online say that they just don't like it. Some people love it. Some people just don't like it at all because it definitely has a personality and it might not be everyone's cup of tea, but I loved it. And then the movie that I watched what date was this? It was on the 14th, maybe 15th, maybe. I watched Halloween 6, The Curse of Michael Myers, producer's cut. So I don't know that I've ever seen a movie. I've seen director's cuts, but I don't think I've ever seen a producer's cut. And I don't know if that's because the director just did not want to go back to it and revisit it or what the deal was, but this one, of course, it's directed by Joe Chappelle, who's gone on or actually has spent a lot of his career directing movies or I'm sorry, TV shows, including he did a lot of episodes for The Wire and he produced a lot of episodes for The Wire. And he also directed Fringe. I think you might have watched that show, didn't you? No,
okay. No, I did not.
But at any rate, it's not a very good movie. This is the second time I've seen it. It's the only Halloween movie that I had only seen once. And it's not great. They go in and they have, in part five, they set up this idea that there was a cult tied to Michael called Thorn. And I mean, just saying that it just doesn't, it's not right. And for whatever reason, they felt the need to give Michael a motivation. And basically, it turned out that Michael was just a stooge for this cult of old white people. It really made no sense at all to me. And it was unfortunate because it started out pretty, it has a great Halloween atmosphere. It obviously was shot in the fall in a small town that looks like it could be in Illinois. And it has some of the best, like, just Halloween feeling to it for the first half of the movie. And I was really kind of, I was like, you know what? Maybe I gave this movie a bad shake when I first saw it. Maybe it's better than I thought it was. Or maybe this producer's cut has found the niche that this movie should have been. And it's got a young Paul Rudd, who incidentally looks an awful lot like the old Paul Rudd.
No, he does not age.
But he's very intense in this. Like, I it's very strange to see him so intense because he's normally Mr. Laid-back guy, you know, kind of smart alecky guy. He's very intense in this. And he plays the young Tommy Doyle, who was the boy being babysat by Jamie Lee Curtis in the original Halloween. So I thought that was kind of an interesting turn. But then it goes away from that to this whole thing about this cult and everything. And the thing about Michael is you don't need him to have a motivation, right? Like, we don't need a backstory for Michael. We don't need to know why he's out killing people. We just need to know he's evil. That's it. That's way scarier than knowing, oh, there's a reason he's doing this. You know what I mean? Like, if you're being...
Whatever reason they could have come up with would never live up to, you know, what I could come up with in the back of my head that, or, you know, yeah, I don't need a reason for this. And I don't even want to know why a zombie apocalypse starts.
Yeah, no, just plot me in the middle of it. Fine. I'll catch up. It doesn't matter to me. Yep. I don't need to know why, but especially I don't need to know the why with a character who is just evil. That's all we need to know. Is knowing that there's a cult controlling Michael Myers, does that make him scarier than if he's just pure evil? No. So I guess they were just trying to find something to do that wasn't just the same old thing. But please give me the same old thing. If I go to a Halloween, I'm not looking for Amadeus here. I'm looking for, you know, I want just Michael Myers on Halloween. I want a Halloween atmosphere. And I want him killing people for no good reason. And then, you know, getting away in the end and the movie ends. But they just won't let us have that. It was Donald Pleasance. I believe it was his last performance in any movie. It was definitely his last performance in a Halloween movie. I believe he died not. In fact, I believe he died during filming, which explains some of the reason that the story is so disjointed and jumbled. They also had a lot of cooks in the kitchen, from what I've read. A lot of producers got involved and changed the story here and there. And I guess it was a big mess. I don't think they didn't have an ending. The ending of this was, it basically just ends. It doesn't really have a very good ending. So it's not one I recommend, but if you are a Halloween completist, then obviously you've got to watch it. You're kind of forced to do so. And for the first hour or so, you're going to enjoy it and you're going to think, hey, this isn't too bad, but you'll be wrong. The other thing, there was a friend of mine in it. Somebody I know is in this. Mariah O'Brien plays, and this is a very creep, not, I don't know if this is creepy, but it's a very strange coincidence, Joe. Mariah O'Brien plays a character named Beth, who's kind of the friend of one of the main girls, right? And she is someone who is part of a group of friends of mine that I met through somebody I worked with about 10 years ago or something, right? And we all hung out a lot, her and her husband. She used to be married to a famous actor, but she's married to somebody else now and they have kids. And we all hung around together. Her parents also. Mariah's mom and dad hung around us and everything. Turns out, years later, I meet Michelle, my wife now, right? Mariah, her parents bought Michelle's house that she grew up in Acton, California, which is this little town, like an hour outside or 45 minutes outside LA. They bought her house and they live in it. So these were friends of mine. Yeah. Before Small I even world. Met Michelle, and they live in her house. Anyway, Mariah, their daughter, is in Halloween 6, The Curse of Michael Myers. So it's definitely worth checking out. It's not a great movie. You're not going to like it, but I suggest you got to watch it. So,
yeah, I just for the
Rudd. I mean, seeing Paul Rudd and seeing intense Paul Rudd, it's a little disconcerting.
He's an America's Next Sweetheart. Is.
Yeah.
You know, All right. Speaking of Small World, the next movie I saw, 1988's Night of the Demon. I'm sorry, Night of the Demons, plural. I wouldn't want to let that out. So this is what I remember 80s horror films to be like when I was growing up as a kid. It's got every archetype you could imagine. It's got the jocks. It's got the dumb fat guy. And actually, his name is Stooge. It's got the good girl. It's got the party couple. And then, of course, it's got the slutty goth girls that are really into summoning zombies and demons and whatnot. Now, here's where I get into the Small World part. It also stars a young Linnea Quigley.
No, it doesn't ring a bell. No,
Had you ever seen Return of the Living Dead with the punks that go out into the graveyard? Okay. Linnea Quigley played Trash, which was the girl punk that got all naked and danced up on top of the things. Okay. You know where she's from?
Really?
Davenport, Iowa.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Born in 1958 from Davenport, Iowa. So anyway, she's, of course, one of the demon summoners, I guess, in this 1988 classic. This was just, I mean, terrible writing, terrible effects. It was hilarious. I loved it. It was just campy. And like I said, it was more like a step into the Wayback Machine of what, you know, I used to watch when we'd go over to a friend's house for like a sleepover. You know, this was... I still remember walking through like our local Blockbuster video or whatever the local one was called and seeing this VHS cover sitting on the shelves forever. This was just pure nostalgia. If you want to wind back the clock a few years, go ahead, pop this one in. I recommend it. I thought it was great fun.
Excellent.
We'll have to see if we can find Linnea Quigley, you know, maybe we can get her on the show for an interview.
Let's see. I've got 3-4 left. How many do you have left?
Three.
So, I'll do two and this one, right? And then we'll be caught up. So, my next one that I watched on day 16 was The Wolf of Snow Hollow, which is on Amazon. I believe I rented it on Amazon. I believe I rented it on Amazon. It was just released. It's 2020. It's a great little werewolf yarn. It's set someplace in the northwest, I believe, someplace where there's mountains and snow. And there's a werewolf involved. And it's about these police officers trying to investigate who is doing these murders. And of course, nobody wants to believe that it's a werewolf. They do find werewolf or wolf tracks and people being murdered in ways that you wouldn't think a wolf would do it. Body parts missing that seemed planned and that kind of thing. So it's really about it. There's a sense of humor too. It's a little on the campy side, but purposefully campy. So there's a really, it can be very funny at times, but it's also got some great tense moments and kind of reminded me a little bit. It's a creature feature, you know, it's sort of like Jaws or any monster movie, but it's sort of an updated one. And I thought the officers were great. And of course it's starring the last performance by Robert Forster. And so it was definitely one I wanted to watch. I was hoping it was going to be released in October because Robert Forster, his daughter and her husband were good friends of mine. And I spent a lot of time with their family and spent some time with him. And he's just the nicest guy, kindest person. I got to play horseshoes with him, which is one of the thrills of my life. And he's just a great actor. He was, of course, in Jackie Brown, Tarantino's Jackie Brown. He's been in a ton of things, but this was his last performance. And it's a good little movie. I highly recommend you see it if you, especially if you're into werewolf movies. It's got a good mystery to it, And it sort of reminds me of a cross between Jaws and Silence of the Lambs for some reason. And there's a comedic piece to it that neither of those movies really had, and a little campiness thrown in, but it's a good mixture of things that I really enjoy in movies and in horror movies. I like a little comedy with my horror too sometimes. So it's not a flat out comedy. There are things about these characters' personalities that are funny, but it is serious. When the werewolf comes along, those are serious, tense scenes, but you get some relief from the comic relief. And then on day 17, I watched an anthology on the streaming service Shudder, which again, I highly recommend. There's a lot of really good horror movies and ones that you might not have been exposed to it on Shudder. So I highly recommend that, especially for this month, at least for the cost of a rental, you get a whole month of tons of movies. But anyway, it's called The Mortuary Collection. It just came out, was just released 2020, and it's an anthology. Basically, it kind of reminds me of Tales from the Hood a little bit, in that it's set in a mortuary and there's an undertaker there, and he's kind of an old creepy guy. And this young girl comes and basically applies for a job there. She sees a help wanted sign, and the undertaker is kind of preparing to retire at some point, but there's something off about him, something very mysterious about him. So in the course of their interview, he begins to tell different stories, and of course about things that have happened in that area. And those stories are the little shorts that are in this anthology. And most of them, there was one, a very, very, very short one that is really fun. But all of them are really, a lot of times when you see an anthology, they're not even stories. Like, there'll be one that's really good, and then the next one you're like, kind of, you know, it's time to go get your popcorn or whatever. And then the next one will be good, and then the next one isn't so great. This one, every story is good. They're all tight and neatly executed. So I think there isn't one in the whole batch that is bad. And it's got a great atmosphere, a good, like, creepy haunted house kind of atmosphere. It's great for October. It's a good one. I highly recommend it. This one is The Mortuary Collection, and it's on Shudder.
Yeah, I haven't really been finding a whole lot of horror on my Disney Plus account, so I might have to look into switching to Shudder.
Yeah, Shudder is well worth it. I think it's $7 or something like that, and you get like a whole month of awesomeness.
I don't know. The Jeff Goldblum stuff on Disney Plus can get pretty scary, but you know, oh well. My next one is the 2019 movie called The Hole in the Ground.
Good one.
This one, I believe I saw this on Amazon Prime. There's so many like little nods and homages to The Shining in this one, which, you know, made me, you know, stand up and take notice. There's a wonderful introductory scene where, you know, of course she's driving her car, and the sweeping overhead cinematography zooming in on, and then it eventually just turns completely upside down, just like the beginning of The Shining. I also noticed this, the main character, Sarah O'Neill, she's moving into this new house with her son. I believe she was either divorced or the husband died. Maybe they didn't even touch on that. I'm not sure. But she's, of course, remodeling the house in all of her spare time. But when she finally gets all the old wallpaper off and puts the new one up, it's basically a silver rendition of what you would see in the Overlook Hotel carpet. So these guys definitely did their homework. It's sort of a Invasion of the Body Snatchers type of storyline. The son goes missing, and they live in this outlying town in Ireland. All these, you know, weird, goofy things are happening throughout the town. And the boy goes off wandering and finds this giant crater hole in the middle of the forest. He, of course, is told never to go out there because it's far too dangerous. And then all of a sudden, one day, the boy's behavior begins to change. The mother's getting awful suspicious. Is this really my son or is it not? Strange people in the neighborhood. It's just, it's a nice thriller. I highly recommend this film. This was fun to watch.
Yeah. You know, I watched that one, I think maybe last winter, something like that. And we really liked that one too. It's good. It's a pretty good kind of mystery thriller-ish.
Yeah. Love those Irish accents.
Yeah, no, they're fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, my next one was, what did I do? Oh, Mortuary Collection. Oh, yeah, my next one is Honeymoon from 2014. And this one is a really tight little thriller, too. It's not... let me just put it this way. It's not... I wouldn't say it's scary, but it definitely is... There's a good tension to it. Basically, it's this husband and wife. It stars, what was her name? Rose Leslie or something like that. Rose Leslie, yeah. And Harry Treadaway. Now, Rose Leslie, you would remember if you watched Game of Thrones, she was the wilding that Jon Snow married. She wound up dying. And then Harry Treadaway, her husband, I don't know if you saw Penny Dreadful, the TV show, the first series.
No.
That one, I highly recommend that one. That one's great. Beautiful, beautiful horror television show that was on Showtime. Really, really good. Anyway, Harry Treadaway, he played Dr. Frankenstein in Penny Dreadful. There's kind of a mashup of there's Frankenstein and his monster in it and other things. That's Penny Dreadful. Anyway, Harry Treadaway, he plays the husband in this. It's husband and wife. They get married. They go on a honeymoon to the wife's cabin on a lake. They go to this lake and they see an old bow of the wife's, and he's acting weird, and his wife is... looks like she's almost been beat up, and she's very strange acting. And they're like, well, what's going on? And come to find out that there's something not right about this lake and what's going on in the woods outside. So one night the husband wakes up and his wife's not in bed, and he starts looking for her, and he's looking all over, and he goes outside and he finds her naked in the woods. And she doesn't remember how she got there, supposedly, and or what was going on. He finds weird footprints and all this stuff, and she starts acting weird. She's got these marks on her too, on her thighs. She's got like these bite marks, and but she doesn't know. She won't say what it is. It's, there's all this mystery, and he's like, well, we need to just get out of here. And it turns out, obviously, there's something going on. He wakes up one night and there's this weird light shining into different windows. It'll shine in the window almost like it's a giant beam of light. And then it turns off, and then it'll come in a different window and turn on. So it's sort of got an alien-ish feeling. Is it aliens? Is it some creepy guy out in the woods? What is it? And so that's part of the mystery, is finding out what exactly is going on. But it's a good one. Michelle and I watched it and were definitely taken by it. And it was pretty exciting. I thought the ending was good. I mean, it ended kind of the way I thought it was going to end, but still, it was so well done. You didn't mind too much. Ending didn't blow me away, but the process getting there and everything was really good. So that is Honeymoon from 2014.
All right. My second to last movie is Evil Eye. It was one of the four Blumhouse movies that just came out. There was Evil Eye, Nocturne, Black Box, and The Lie. Evil Eye takes place in New Orleans and New Delhi, or actually just Delhi, about a young girl who lives in New Orleans and her overprotective Indian mother over in Delhi that is constantly hounding her to be set up so that she can finally get married, stop being the outcast of her family. So she's ignoring the persistence of her mother and leaves it up to fate and finds a suitor that she falls madly in love with. Let's just say that there is it is a story of kismet, karma, and reincarnation. This had quite a twist. I like to call these movies a long walk off a short pier. It really takes a long time to get set up and to see kind of where they're going to twist things at the end. The twists are not really that fulfilling. I was a little disappointed in one of these. My wife has watched, I believe, two or three of the others. I was told that they're all pretty much the same sort of long walk, short pier type scenario. It was okay. I'd recommend it if you're finding yourself just, you know, wanting to get through all the Blumhouse stuff, the four movies that they just released. They're okay. I wouldn't rave about them. I wouldn't expect a whole lot, but they're mildly entertaining.
My last one, I just watched this today, and that is Possession by from 1981, and this is, I would say, it's grown into one of my favorite movies. It's really hard to describe. It's a very strange film. It's not going to be something that everyone's going to like, so I don't recommend it to everyone. It's a very odd movie. It's directed by a director named Zerlosky, and apparently, and he also wrote it. He wrote the original screenplay. And apparently when he was making this movie, he was going through, or when he wrote the movie, at least, he was going through a horrible divorce. And that's what this movie's about. It stars a very young Sam Neill and a very young Isabella Gianni. And the two of them are married, and he comes home from a trip, and there's something, he knows their marriage, you can tell their marriage, there's something wrong. Something's not right. She seems to not be home a lot when he was calling, and he was out of town on business. And he comes back for a long time, apparently. And he comes back and he's like, where were you? Where were you at this night? Where were you? And he just suspects that she's up to something. And sure enough, she's having an affair with someone, a guy named Heinrich. And in one of the funniest confrontations in a movie, Sam Neill goes to Heinrich's house, and they get into a sort of fight that Sam Neill should never have gotten himself into. He winds up getting beat up in the process, and turns out this guy's sort of like a martial artist. But it is definitely, you see the pain of this marriage dissolving, and it's all very raw. It's all very abusive. It's all very out there. And you can just see this is sort of the embodiment of what this director was going through in his own life. And I just got to say, the performance by Isabella Gianni is, I think, one of the most frenetic performances by an actor I've ever seen. And there's a scene that lasts, I'm not, 7 minutes, 5 minutes, something like that, of her basically just screaming in a subway hallway with all kinds of stuff coming out of her, like blood and some kind of white goo and other things just coming out of her orifices. It is intense, but it's so good to me. It's I like very strange, weird movies, and it is right up there with some of the strangest ones. So I bought it and it arrived yesterday. So I wanted to make sure I watched it. I highly recommend it. It's very hard to see. You can't stream it anywhere. They have a Blu-ray available on Amazon, and I bought a DVD actually on eBay of it, but otherwise, it's very difficult to get your hands on. It's not one that they ever show anywhere. The first time I saw it was out here in LA at a film double feature at the Egyptian Theater. They played this with The Fly, Jeff Goldblum's The Fly. And they're both have a similar theme, relationships and that sort of thing, and people changing and kind of a metamorphosis. The secret at the heart of Possession is something I won't get into, but it's right up there with one of the strangest revelations in any movie I've seen. So that's Possession from 1981.
Okay, I completely forgot about another movie that I watched. I got to throw this in there just because it was so weird. I saw this on HBO. It was the 78 film Magic with Anthony Hopkins, Anne Margaret, and Burgess Meredith.
That movie, I just had this conversation
it's
with
so
my friend
creepy.
Alexis. Yeah, my friend Alexis, who is listening to us, not right now because we're recording, but he listened to our first one. He really enjoyed it. He's a screenwriter out here in LA. And actually I went to see Possession at that double feature with Alexis. Anyway, he said that he watched Magic the other day. The reason I bring this up is because I told him this story. When I was a kid, the television commercial for that movie was the scariest thing I had ever seen in my life. Probably, it was the reason why I didn't like horror movies for a long time. I was terrified. When commercials came, I would leave the room so that I didn't have to see this commercial. So I highly recommend everyone go on YouTube and search Magic movie, TV commercial, TV spot or whatever. And it gives you the creep. It gives me the creeps even now seeing it. Now, when I watch the movie, it wasn't that scary,
It's not scary, but it is just creepy. And for those people that haven't seen or don't know anything about it, Anthony Hopkins plays a character named Corky, who originally was an aspiring magician, I believe. And it didn't really pan out. And so he switched his efforts into being a puppeteer, marionette. I don't know what the ventriloquist, with his dummy named Corky, or no, Fats. Sorry. Dummy named Fats. He ends up becoming quite a hit, and he gets courted by national television, and he kind of wants to get away from it all, and ends up driving out to his hometown to kind of see his high school sweetheart, played by Anne Margaret. They begin to start a little relationship, and things start to go awry. And of course, Corky's manager is played by the ever-loved Burgess Meredith, who is just absolutely fantastic in the scene. And it really becomes a question of who is the dummy and who's controlling who in this. This just, like Matt said, find the commercial at least. If you're not going to put in the hour and a half to watch this thing, at least go watch the commercial so you can see just how creepy this dummy Fats is. I'm so glad I watched it. It's probably the scariest little puppet thing I've seen since Poltergeist. So give this one a watch.
Yeah. That one, the commercial terrified me, and it is good. The movie itself is pretty creepy too. But it's nothing like the commercial. Yeah. And obviously I was when this movie came out, what year was it?
78.
Yeah. 78. When this movie came out, I was, you know, just a kid. So it was terrifying to me. It was just,
I never saw this as a kid. This wasn't even a blip on my radar. And now that I've seen it, I'm glad. You know, I was 6 years old when this movie came out. That would have just ruined me for life.
Yeah. I was years old, something like that. And so, yeah, no, I didn't watch the movie, but the commercial itself is that dummy.
Yeah.
It's just him. His head and shoulders. Ugh. It's a close up shot of him, and he's doing this like nursery rhyme.
Yeah.
That and his eyes kind of roll up in his head. It is, everybody, as soon as you're done listening to this podcast, please go.
If we can find it, maybe we'll put a link to the commercial in the show notes.
Yeah. That's a good idea. Yeah, we could do that or post it to the Facebook group or whatever.
Okay. And of course, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. As I mentioned earlier, my last movie was The Babysitter Killer Queen. The follow-up to The Babysitter, this was released in 2020 and, of course, straight to Netflix. It's got the whole original gang. Again, this is not a fantastic movie. It was fun to watch, but they jumped the shark. They are extremely self-aware of what they had in the first movie, and they just put it in the formula. They punched up the script a little bit, added a couple funny characters here and there, and then it was basically the same movie as last time. So I guess that being said, if you like the original, you're going to like the sequel, but if you're looking for something new and inventive, this ain't it. But it's still, you know, there's a lot worse things you could be watching on Netflix. I will say Emily Allen Lind, who plays the character of Melanie, his Cole's little sweetheart that lives down the street. She was also in Dr. Sleep. It has a much more predominant role in this one, a better role. She's very good actress. Loved her in Dr. Sleep. Sort of came out of nowhere. Couldn't believe just how young she actually was. Yeah, it's watch the first one. And if you're still hungry for more, go ahead and watch number two.
Okay. Well, Joe, we have definitely done it. This is our second episode, and It's this one is a little longer than the rest of them are going to be. We're going to try to keep them to 30 to 45 minutes unless we have a guest or something special going on. But this one was a little longer because it had been a couple weeks and we wanted to talk about the movies that we've been watching on during our Shocktober time. I will recommend a couple others that you should watch if you get Shudder. And we're not being sponsored by Shudder, so
yet.
I'm only
not yet.
Yet. I'm only recommending it because it is such a good service. But if you do watch, if you do get a subscription to Shudder, there are two movies you should watch: Satan's Slaves, plural. There's also one called Satan's Slave. That one you don't need to watch, but Satan's Slaves and a movie called Terrified. They're both foreign. Terrified is from Argentina, and it's a great one. Not to be confused with Terrifier. That's a different thing with a clown, which is good too. But Terrified is really good movie, and Satan's Slaves. Those two, if you watch those, I think you're going to be off to a good start on Shudder. But in the meantime, please, everyone, if you could send us your ghost stories, your personal ghost stories, things, if you've had experiences in your homes or you know a story that you know of that is a really good one, please get in contact with us. It is cinescarehorror@gmail.com, or you can message us on Facebook or Twitter or any of the other services that we are, and send us your stories. And if we like them, we will read them on the air.
Yeah, we'll give you a little shout out.
Yeah, I guess that's it, Joe. We've done it again, Matt. We've done it again. And everybody have a great week. We will see you again next week with a show just before Halloween and talk a little bit. We won't have as many movies to talk about next week, but hopefully we'll have maybe a couple ghost stories for you and a little something special maybe.
And again, happy birthday, Bela Lugosi.
Yes, happy birthday. All right, everybody, have fun. Save us, bear.